Love? And though they could have seen Baba, they could have received. But that time, no. And they were crying. And now, with his broken body, and anything but looking like one who can stand up and say, I'm God. And here they have received that revelation. The way they were standing, to this day, that picture has not gone from my mind. You see, they were revelations to us too. Because we have not always been able to see the outer ripples. We have not been actively in those ripples. We can only know from letters or hearsay. But once in a while, we were able to actually experience, witness. And this, we witnessed that. Like we witness what we witness now.
He was here for all so many decades.
He just said go and see the women, embrace Mara first. And so Janice and Phyllis and I don't think Artie's wife was with us. I don't think she came up, or she was up there with the women, I don't remember. But as we went up, the women came, Mara came down, Mara and the women came out of the house and rushed down towards us, you know. And as this woman rushed up to me and said, are you Cynthia? And I looked at her and I thought, you know, who's this plain woman? And then I realised it was Mara. And I was quite astonished, you know. I almost didn't want to embrace her at first because I thought, oh, no, this isn't Mara. I thought Mara was sort of like the, because Barbara described her as purity personified. I expected something like, you know, the Virgin Mary sort of. I'd seen photos of her and I knew she was physically beautiful. And so I thought she was sort of just like on a pedestal, you know, just something that was beautiful. I didn't expect her to be human looking. Even. And she was. She looked very, and at first sight, she looked to me, she looked like a rather plain woman. And then she embraced me, and then I looked again, and she didn't look like a plain woman. But I was sort of puzzled. I kept on looking at her because I couldn't work out what was different. And anyway, we went up, and then Money sort of, you know, we embraced all the other women then, and Money said, oh, you know, at long last, because we'd been writing for years, you know. And then they were just sort of talking in a normal sort of way, and I thought, oh, they're just like ordinary people, you know. There was no spiritual talk or anything like that. And then Money rushed up and, oh, no, Mara came up to me and she said, you must come and look at Barbara's room and all that sort of thing. So she took me to Barbara's room first and said, you know, do this and touch that. And so I sort of went around in a daze. And then she took me into, Money was with us too, and she took us into Money's room and her room, which was the same room, I think. Yeah, that's right. And she said, you know, that's my bed and that's Money's bed. And she said, and that's my garden. She showed me the garden, which looked beautiful, you know. And then she said, Money and I, we have so much trouble at night. She said something like, you know, she likes the window up and Money likes it down. So they spend the whole night pushing the window up and down. And I thought, oh, gee, they really are just ordinary, you know, just human. And then she kept on embracing me. She, you know, Mara, you know how she ever embraces anyone now. It's just, you know, and doesn't embrace even. She just, you know, if you're lucky, she'll let you kiss her on the cheek or something. Well, then she would have embraced me 6, 7, 8 times, I think. In fact, I ended up sort of reeling and thinking, you know, what's going on? She's constantly hugging me. And when she, any time she talked about Barbara, her face seemed to change, you know, and she... That seemed to sort of illumine her, and I could see why she was beautiful. But and that was all, you know. It was only a fairly brief contact, you know. And they were all gabbling at us, you know, all asking this, that, and the other, and rushing around, and people rushing up to be embraced and all this sort of thing. I think they'd seen so few people for so long that it was tremendous for them, you know. And Mara did talk about different things, and unfortunately I've forgotten. But none of them were sort of about spiritual matters, you know, just, I think she told me about Barbagen, that's right, she said, where was Barbara going to send us? And she told me about Barbagen and her meeting with her and the white horse thing, which I promptly forgot until I was reading it again later on. And that was about all. Mm-hmm.
So you do it from the
No.
Is this your first time?
Yeah, when Baba dropped his body in Melbourne, we had, you know, people reacted in different ways. And some people in Melbourne just got this urge to go, and others like myself, my father, Dr. O'Brien, Dennis O'Brien, who Baba had appointed as his representative in Melbourne, and, you know, we had the reaction of just, first of all, just couldn't believe it, and then secondly, just numbness. And that lasted for a long time. We didn't want to do anything. We didn't want to go to the Grave Darshan. We didn't want to have contact with other Baba followers except our, you know, who our family and friends, you know. It was, I didn't want to read anything, do anything, talk about Baba. Just Yeah. But it was the same when I came here again. I had the same thing, you know. I sort of looked at Mara and I thought, that Mara? And then, but when she's talking about Baba, she changes completely. And to me, she's an ordinary-looking woman who is transformed by her love for Baba. And it's like, you know, it's like looking at two faces, really. But I said that to her. I said, Baba told me to love him more last time. You know, and I don't understand what Baba means. You know, it's always double Dutch to me. And I'd read this, and, you know, you read all these things, serve me and others, and love me and others, and, you know, don't slander and backbite and all that. But it's sort of all confusing to me, you know, when it comes to the crunch and you're actually doing things, I don't understand it. And I thought, oh, well, maybe I'll get a chance here to sort of ask Erich or someone what loving him more means, you know, how you do it. And so I was sitting in the kitchen, that's right, you know, where Baba used to have his meals, which you must have got to know very well. And Mara was sitting at the head, of course, next to Baba's chair, and I was at the other side. You know, Dr. Goward put me there, and Mara was just sort of rattling on about, you know, ordinary things. You know, I can't even remember what they were. And then I said to her, "Oh, is this where Baba used to have his meals?" And she said, "Yes, yes, but just his breakfast, you know, and sometimes lunch, I think it was, but his breakfast, you know." And then she turned and she touched his chair. And she said, "Oh, Baba," and she kissed the chair, and her face again, you know, lit up. And I said to her later, I said, I was wondering how to love Baba more, you know, what that means. And I said, and I looked at you and I could see it. I mean, I don't know how to do it, but I could see, well, that's what it looks like. And she said, "Oh, that's not my," she said, "Oh, that's your love for Baba." You know, she said, "If you didn't have it, you couldn't see it." And she just sort of rattles those things off. She doesn't even think about them, you know. And, you know, almost to say, you stupid little life. Fancy not understanding a simple thing like that, you know. And I find her a really interesting contrast, you know, because she really talks about very mundane things, you know. And then suddenly, bang, you know, this, you know, she just really, I think she and Erich probably understand Baba the best. And it's so natural to her. You can see, not the thought doesn't even pass through her head, I don't. She just out it comes. Yeah, and it's quite astonishing. Yeah. Well, that's what he told us, and you know, that's when I can see it. When, because I don't know anybody else who reacts that way. Yeah.
That's right.
That was the other thing that hit me on that occasion in 64. I was sort of looking at her and thinking, oh, you know, I mean, I could see that this would just illumine her whole, and that was what was beautiful about her. But the thing that struck me then, which I've never seen on any other, never been aware of with other Baba lovers, and that is, you know, when you're a Baba follower, I don't call myself a Baba lover because I don't think I do very much, but when you're a Baba follower and you're sort of, you've got all those blights and weaknesses and festering sores and all that, if someone else, you know, if you encounter other Baba followers and they're talking about their experiences and all that sort of thing, for weak people, it's normal to feel, oh, you know, those are lucky so-and-sos, and why didn't I get that? And, you know, to be jealous of each other. And Mara is the only one I've ever encountered who responds to the love of Baba in others. And, you know, if if Mara can see your love for Baba, that's like giving her a Christmas present. She's not jealous at all. And I thought to myself, I reckon if somebody came who loved Baba more than she did, she'd think that was the most fantastic thing that had ever happened. She'd be so glad. And that's what's so unusual about it, because most others, all like me, I'd be just be jealous, you know. Except that
she thought that Baba was loving them more than her. She might
be able to. I don't think she would. I think she'd be, you know, I don't think she had any thought of herself. It's like, the, you know, for her there's nothing but
Baba.
Yeah. That's what I mean when she was embracing me all the time, you know, I felt it was that, yeah, well, a little bit, you know, and she was responding to that, and whereas other people think, oh, you know, I wonder if she loves me, it loves Baba more than I do. Not Mara, no thought of herself. Just, you know, oh, isn't that wonderful? And then she'd hug you, you know, you've done something special for her.
Mm.
Yeah.
And she
mm. Did she?
Again, so there was another second time when that was read out, and while sitting on the bed with his feet on the cushion while we were reading, or sitting on the chair, he would now and then ask, how small do you think they were, how small? And he would bend down from the chair, say this small, and I would say, oh, Baba, I think this small, tiny. So they were beautiful people. And then he said, remember, read it out to me the third time. So the book is there, handy. And Baba wants it read the third time. And I'm wondering sometimes whether that was a clue for me to ask a question of Baba, a question that now comes to mind, which I didn't ask him. And remember I told you how I asked Baba when my father said that how he came to know Persian, Arabic, Hebrew so well when he hadn't gone to school because he'd given everything up to go look for God, in search of God, and how he said, it just came to me in a moment, child. And I asked him, I said, how's that you speaking Hebrew to this lady who comes every week or a few weeks? And that's why I like the sound of that song that you sing, Terry, and also Sally Pearson would sing. That intonation, I love it, because I've heard my father and that lady talk. Or when a Muslim was translating something from Arabic, a street title of some kind, when he was stuck, he would come to my father, and my father would correct or tell him which was the right word. And he knew Persian so well that he taught my mother Hafiz. And they would sit in the evening across each other and facing each other with that beautiful sandalwood book stand between them, that carved kind that folds, with a big Shahnameh book on it. Shahnameh is the history of Persia. And they would read. My father taught my mother Persian and taught her Hafiz and taught her Shahnameh, because my mother only knew the dialect, Dari, which is what I am able to speak. Now, of course, I'm rusty. and that is when they were reading about the story of Bajan and a princess named Manija. In the midst of that, when my mother had to go to the hospital with labor pains when I was born, which is why I was named Manija. So that, when I asked my father, how come you know all these languages? You said you left home, didn't go to school, you didn't do any of the things the other children did. You just started out to look for, in search of God. And he said, it just came to me, child, it came in a minute. And that kind of thing, a child absolutely believes, accepts totally, because one's heart is so pure and clear. But later when you grow up, you have read and you have known and all this knowledge gets into science. Started wondering, why did my father say that? He would never lie. I knew my father never to lie. And I knew I myself could tell a little lie very easily. The drop of a pin, I could say that. But he never did, so how come? So I asked Baba. And Baba said, so what? Baba said, all the knowledge is within you. But how long does it take? But I said, in a moment, Baba. How can you know in a moment? We have to go to school now. And he said, how long does it take to remove a curtain from something that is hidden? I said, a minute, you know, an instant. Exactly. And then he said, it's only given rarely to very few rare ones who have given up that thing for me, for God. Then God is always, he provides. So this was given to my father because my father gave it up for us. But there was another thing which I felt I could have asked Baba at the time when I was reading The Little Grey Men. Because once my father said that for 3 months he was away, the little people, the little men, the little beings had taken him to their world, to their den, to their house, home, I don't remember the exact word, but to their place, and kept him for 3 months with them, and only brought him back after 3 months. So here, whenever Baba kept saying, how big were these little people of the book that I was reading to him? That is the time this thought should have entered and say, oh, Baba, you know, Baba used to say that, and then Baba would have told me something. A number of times he brought that up. He said, how little were the little people? But I never thought of that. I couldn't. But I have that book, and so in the end, I read it out to myself again. And I said, Baba, third time. You said I have to read it out to the third time, so it's all ready. Yes, giving, you know, when you give something for God, for Baba, that very act of giving is a receiving. Our giving is seen by our eyes. His giving, that is our receiving, is not known to us at the time. But it's always, no matter what you're giving to Baba, it's really a receiving from him. And I recall having the last month, the last week rather, when Baba was weak in health, physically, he looked weak. Although at times he was very strong. But when he was weak and he was sitting up on the bed, and there would be a table before him for his meal or something, to give a support to him, I used to sit on the other side of on the bed, on the other side, and lean my back against Baba's back. And sometimes Rana took turns. Rana and I took turns. So I would sit like that, and I felt I was supporting Baba. My back was supporting. My back was like a cushion, a chair back, for him to lean against. And I'd sit there for a long time like that, and feeling. Sometimes now I can actually feel that touch of Baba. And yet, you see, what I thought I was supporting Baba, it was Baba who was supporting me. Because at a time, one didn't know who was leaning against who. And but it's the same in everything. So I know now, definitely, that he gave me the feeling, the honor, the joy to think I'm supporting Baba. But at that very time when I thought I was giving, I was receiving. He was supporting me. Because I recall one time before he was confined totally to his room, the last few days, he would come over to the dining room. Mara was always there supporting him. And because he was weak in health, I was supporting him too. And I had my whole arm through his arm, you know, arm in arm, and I was holding like that, and Baba was holding a kerchief over his nose with that same hand, which I was holding tight, and I thought, now see, I must be very careful, you know, leading Baba, and Baba's leaning on my arm. And suddenly, most unexpectedly, Baba gave a tug and drew me to him. You know, just walking on, just this little interruption which I felt, and suddenly I felt I was leaning on Baba. It wasn't Baba who was leaning on me. He was leading me. I wasn't leading him. And that is so true. And every little thought and every little act, and every little thing that he gives you the joy of feeling you're doing for him, remember at that very moment, you're receiving. Because there is no giving in us, except giving up. It is all his. But that giving up thing, and at that moment, you're receiving. Look at this. Why I tell the story about my father's knowledge of these languages is his giving. Oh, you gave that up for me? He gives it thousandfold. That's why I love that story that I'll ask Eros to tell about that lover of God, Eros, who was a station master or a guard. He was a guard.
Yeah.
You see, we had these steam engines, a compartment in a train. It was too full, I don't know, but some of us were in the guard's van. And he always gets down there until he waves the green flag, the driver will never stop the train. So it used to be very organized, you know, very, very nice. So from what Eros said, this guard, because there he is for the Lord, but look what the Lord, he never fails, never. In the last days in the room, when he was sitting on the party or when he was sitting on the bed, and he said to Eros, don't worry. I'll never let you down. I'll never let you down. I never let my lovers down. Because we were worried about this darshan that was to be in Pune. How could Baba conduct it? Baba, even now, if you say your lovers wouldn't want to you to undergo all that exhaustion and strain in such health, they would accept the fact that you're postponing the darshan. You know, we were worried. And Baba says, no, everything will be fine. I'll never let my lovers down. I'll never let you down. I'll never let you all down. And that is so literally true. But you see, we know he's God. We believe, we love, we trust. But really, we haven't got that absolute rock-like trust as we have the rock-like conviction. It's paradoxical because that conviction should provide that trust. But, you know, sometimes, like when we were with Baba, when he was God, first he was man, and when we took him as man, he reminded us that he was, don't forget, I'm God. And yet he would make us forget by playing the simplest game and you know, being so human. And then he would say, don't forget, I'm God. Very casual. But then when we remember that he was God, he would take pains to appear so human. But I tell you, it's through his humanness, so much of his godness came through more than anything else. His little human ways, human acts, that conveyed more of his godness than anything else. And I had a collection of what I call the real sermons, which were the most naturally expressed, casually, because of some incident, because of something, and to me that's the real sermon. They're not in the discourses, but the little things. You couldn't hide yourself, no. As I always say, when his body, he wore out his body for his work, and work means us. But just like a garment wears out and you see a rent, a tear in it, and your body is exposed, so in that garment sometimes there'd be a little tear and God would be exposed so clearly, even if it were a glimpse. Which is why, as Eric said the other day, that it would amaze us to watch, as witness, we were just witness to all this, that just when Baba's body seemed broken and accidents with the fasts and all these things, that is the time we have seen more come to him. And when he gave darshan in New York with a cast on his leg, and we said, oh, Baba. And then we remember the days when Baba was so young and so beautiful, and there were not such people around, not in that numbers, and there were no cameras and no films and no facilities of any kind to capture some of that beauty, even of his form, which he says is not his true self. And here, what would it be? Oh, Baba, poor Baba, he has to see all these people will see him with the cast on. How helpless. How hopeless, how humiliating. But through that we saw his glory. Those that came to him were weeping in love for him. I mean, they didn't want to part. They received what he had to give, despite the physical. And that's why I say these little tears from his, broken body, the broken garment, and God came out so clearly, these little glimpses. Like the time, as I said, when we were in Satara, and we had this experience with the missionaries. The missionaries, very good people, lovely people, but no understanding of God as human form except of Jesus Christ. So when they came to know, they liked us. They loved Dr. Duncan. They loved Dr. Goher. They'd seen us, and they liked us all who were around Baba. And they prayed for us because they thought, how can it be? Jesus is the one and only. So how can all this be? So, but they're such nice people. We said, they're such nice people. They said about us, they're such nice people. They prayed for us. We hoped for them. And yet, it's a long story. But as I said, after that accident, you see, we had a lovely time in Satara, a stay of over 3 years in Satara with Baba. And it was a lovely place and a lovely people because we were only few of us with Baba. And everything was just perfect. And just before the accident, Baba would keep asking us, how do you like Satara? And Mara would say, oh, so nice, Baba. The climate is so temperate. You can even stay on during the monsoon, which you couldn't do at Mahabaleshwar and Panchgani, which is not far from Satara. And the heat is not too much in summer. The cold is not. And it's just lovely. And a quiet place in front of our cottage, the house that we had rented. In front was open grounds where there was a club building, English times. And this club had old books, so we would go now and then. Nobody visited it. I mean, it was just lying by itself for years. There was one caretaker who looked after. We could go in and take any books, and I read quite a few of those books to Baba. So we found, and then we'd go in the morning searching for mushrooms in these grounds, and Peter, our cocker spaniel, with a handmade basket that I'd done, he'd carried in his mouth, and Mara and I would pick flowers for Baba on that. And then the vegetable women, the women selling vegetables on their way to the market, they'd always cross by our gate. So Gohar and Mehru would catch them before they could get to the market, get the fresh vegetables. It was also less expensive. It was cheaper because they had not reached the market. And everything was so nice. We used to do this place for Baba. Naja would dress up every night as a character of some kind. Not in the acting, but she would just dress. And she did some amazing impersonations of these characters. And Baba would, be delighted. Every night she had to do it. So her room was filled with, on the walls, all kinds of things. A sword made of cardboard and wrapped up with silver paper, and all kind of costumes, and beard that was made from, what do you get around the corn? Corn? Other mustaches and beards. And so somebody coming to visit us would be most surprised when they went to Naja's room. And wondered what this all was on the walls and things. So as I said, it was a very happy. We used to go for walks with Baba. Very nice walks in Satara. There was an old church and an old little cemetery, and a very nice feeling. And the roads were such that no matter where you walked, in the end you came back to the road that leads you home. You never got lost. And all this, and we were so happy, and Baba kept asking. We had asked some friends that we knew whether we could have one of the kittens, because their cat was so lovely. They promised that. By the way, the kittens were born soon after we left. And there was this carpenter family. There was this Christian who was a carpenter. And he and his family got very devoted to us. And when they had a son, we said, "What have you named it?" And they said, "Mary Baba." And we said, no, you can't do that. You know, childhood name, birth name is Mehrwan. You should say Mehrwan. And they couldn't say Mehrwan. So we said Mehrban, which is a word in Hindi, Mehrban. And they looked very puzzled. So I said, "You remember the word Mehrban from Mehrbani? Mehrbani means we're obliged, you know, thank you, a way of saying thank you." So in the end, we found out they named the child Mehrbani. And so... So all that was there, and suddenly we were shot out of Satara. It was like a rocket, you know. Everything was just shattered with that accident. We just left Satara without taking anything with us. It was Rana and Naja who stayed behind and packed things and brought over. We went to Pune with Baba. But it was so sudden, so total. We've never gone back. As I said, it's like an explosion. And that's the time when we were leaving, and everybody had known. Mehr Baba was in an accident, bad accident. And one of his followers, his intimate disciple, died. And this was, and all that was there, you know, we could feel it. And yet as we were leaving in the car, who do you think we saw waiting, not even knowing when we would be leaving? Must have waited there for over an hour or hours. Where are these missionaries? There were some men, and they'd removed their hats as the car passed. Such homage, such love. And I said, "Oh, Baba, now when you're broken in body, and now they had a glimpse of him, that through that." And I'll never forget, I mean, all through to Pune, their faces were before me. I said, "So this we have been witness to again and again." Even later, we have all these films of Baba, mostly of the latter period. And I've heard Mara say, you know, when Baba was early, in the early days, so beautiful, why wasn't there anybody around? That's because he didn't want it. Do you know, we had a camera sent by Phyllis, an 8mm movie camera, while we were in Satara. We still had it, Mara had it. But obviously Baba didn't want anything done with it, because there was a film in it, and I took some film of Baba with Shiba, and Shiba's the horse, Mara's horse, beautiful. She was a young colt and so spirited and so vibrant. So when she was doing this, and Baba loved her, and of course it was for Mara. So I took some film of that while she was romping about and very spirited and gay. And then we had to send the film to be developed. It never came out. There just wasn't anything in it. And so that was the end of the first. And before that, we didn't even think of it. As if Baba put his hand over our eyes, he didn't want to. And then, of course, where we see now, sometimes when I watch Baba walking fast for our sakes, for our filming, for you all who would see the film, and I say, and then we think of the time when we've seen Baba walk so beautifully up on these hills, most of these hills around Marazat, Baba has climbed with us. And now here you can see the effort. He even has to move his hands across his body for the balance, because he's walking so fast. And remember, that's after the doctors had said he would not be able to walk. So he was saying, "See, I can walk," and the delight as we watched him took film. But those films that could have been made when he was walking like a wind. One minute you were here and like a ray of sunshine, the next minute you saw him there, even on the hill when it come down, as if he's just walking on a flat ground and to help somebody. Even on Seclusion Hill, Mara is not very good at heights, but nothing was said, but Baba would come and remember and pull one up. Yes, he always pulls us up. Well, actually, Eric, I came here just to listen today.
Huh?
I've come here just to listen, you know, and to see if Sue, or some of you may not have heard it, how we try and remember Baba's giving. And therefore, no matter how you feel or how busy you are, I try never to say no to some little giving that somebody asks for. And I remember there was a young man named Ed Flanagan who had been a priest at one time. And he was sitting outside Adi's office, the reservation office, which is now the reservation office. I sat on a chair. And I was going into the office to ask Pat something or give Kebby something, I forget. But I was in such a hurry. I had no time even to remove the spectacles from my nose.
In this book, Time for Companions, and the trust that people have when certain things seem like some danger is coming, how people have trust in Baba. But I always get confused because certain things that appear bad, sometimes Baba will have happened to us because other things can happen as a result, or for some reason we are meant to have this quote,
yes.
The other thing is all this talk about paying off our karmic debts and certain things that happen to us. And so I get confused about trust. Like if I ask Baba, you know, hope if I have this trust that Baba's going to save me, at the same time I have the thought in my head, maybe Baba wants this to happen. If it's his will, it will.
Yeah.
And that confuses my sense of trust.
No, but you see, there's no question of asking or even thinking or analyzing. Trust is there, like love. There's no arguing about it. It does not mean that one should use that trust in order to safeguard us from any suffering or difficulties. It's never so. It doesn't mean following Baba that your sufferings are going to end. On the contrary, he brings out whatever is there, and you seemingly go through a lot more than you might have if you stayed away from Hare Baba. Because he's never promised that it'll be easy. Never. And that doesn't mean that we have to, it's not a question of avoiding or escaping. There's no. Baba always teaches you to face with trust in him. That you have to do your best. You have not to sit back and lazy, because trust can be a very beautiful and soothing thing. You have trust, all right, you needn't do anything. No, he wants you to do it. And then, trust him that whatever the results will be is what he wants. Not what you want, but what he wants. This is the biggest thing. It's not that kind of thing that I was talking about, but I mean the trust, absolute trust that he knows what he's doing. When we can someday, perhaps, some life, reach to that point where his wish becomes our wish. What he wants becomes what we want. There's no difference. When you want what he wants, then there is no friction. There is no, what do you call it?
Disharmony.
Huh?
Disharmony?
Yes. No, I'm trying to say there's...
Conflict.
Conflict. There's no conflict then. But because these are two different things. What he wants is not what we want. What we want is something different. So there is that. But even in that, he says, we have to do our utmost and then not worry about the result. Why do we worry when a thing doesn't go as we want it? Because it's not what we want.
It just seems like when people are, in extreme danger of either being killed or being raped or something like this,
call
out to Baba. You know, at the same time, what if it's Baba's will?
No. At that time, you do call out to Baba. And it called out from the very heart. Baba has said so. Once he told us long ago that one of the Mandalay, I think it was Sidhu, where Baba was in Mahabaleshwar or Gir Mountain, I don't know. But in the night, Sidhu had gone out for nature's call. And Baba was, of course, always has a twinkle in his eye when he tells us these things. He says, Sidhu was so scared because he saw a tiger in front of him. And he says, he was so scared he couldn't even afterwards tie up his hands. But Sidhu just gave one look at the tiger and turned to stone and then suddenly said, Baba. And the tiger just turned around and walked away. And Baba told us, see, even a tiger recognizes my name. Even a tiger heard my name and turned back and went. He wouldn't touch the person who was saying Baba's name. So that means that we should do, of course. That doesn't mean, on the other hand, what you're saying is you let every circumstance take its course because it must be karma in the same way like I was saying about the trust. No, you have to do your best. And your best is calling out on Baba and on such extreme things, and your best is doing all you can about it. Then, that's different. Then, supposing there's a thing and you're in a court case, you have to do everything. But if the ruling is against you, then not to be disturbed. That's what Baba means by be happy and don't worry. He doesn't mean be happy, doesn't mean like be merry like some have understood to be. But be happy no matter what the result of your efforts. Be happy, either this way or that. If you have a sick child, do your best for it. So if it survives, be happy. If it goes to Baba, be happy, if you can. That's a big thing, but then isn't he big enough for us to give that? No, no, I would like the easy way. Just sit back and say, you know, and... Baba had us to go through all that in the beginning when the trust doors were opened with a bang. There again, the trust was, again, a sleeping little animal, just a little rabbit every now and then. We opened the basket and caressed it and shut the lid again. But after Baba Jatra's body, the trust, which had been dormant for 10 years, just exploded. The lid blew, the top blew, it blew its top. And suddenly we were faced with all the machinery, all the working of the trust. We were supposed to be so expert at all that. And even that very first time, when Baba was lying in the crypt for the 7 days, looking as beautiful and fresh, and people were saying, what are you going to do about the trust? What have you done about the trust? Some, very few individuals. The rest was just like a tidal wave of love. I never can get over how Baba sustained us, despite our agony in private, how when we were out with his lovers, that I've even seen Mara console a woman from Andhra. And she said, Baba hasn't gone. Baba's still with us. And I said, Baba, what is this? And then language was no problem. They said Baba, we said Baba, Jai Baba, Jai Baba, Jai Baba, Jai. And it was full. It was so full. It was a darshan in the most real and biggest sense. And Baba said I would give darshan, reclining. How many hints, how many clues he gave. Do you think they will mind? He told Eric. Francis, do you think they'll mind? No, Baba, why should they mind? If you're reclining or sitting, they just want to be with you. Francis, what do you think? Do you think they'd mind? No, Baba, why would they mind? But we didn't know at the time, while we were telling Baba, that it was the other way around. He was telling us that this is how he was going to get it. This is the way. Oh, yes, he told us very clearly in many different ways. But at the same time, giving us a glimpse of that, he put his hand over our eyes, as it were. Because after that, we just didn't see it. Only after the whole thing was over, we looked back and said, my God, what dumb creatures, what idiots we were. He had made it so clear. Remember, he said this, he did that. Yes. And as I always remember, from the very first moment that he was in control, that he was seeing to every little thing while we were believing ourselves to making arrangements and all. But when Baba dropped his phone, Mehrabad was totally unprepared for anybody coming there. And Padre couldn't possibly handle the sea of people that came, let alone that even a few of them had come. There was no lanterns, no light. And all this was at the night when they were just kept coming. So Baba put a full moon in the sky. And again, we'd see the whole place was lighted up. All that those first days. And it was so full that at the time we went with Baba on 31st January 1969, in the evening time, when we reached Mehrabad, we could see the sun setting on one hand and the moon rising on the other horizon. Absolutely, totally balanced. And as the sun set, the moon came up. And that lantern in the sky lighted. So you see, if he, who takes care of every tiny little thing, would he then neglect the bigger things, the important, seemingly important things? No. We fail to see that sometimes. I'm including myself. But he does not. I love it when we're all quiet and the clock goes. Our hearts should be like the clock.